This is the Anderson Files on Podclips. The Anderson Files is a look at commerce, investment, economics, and retirement issues that affect each and every one of you. Your host is Mike Anderson, Executive Vice President and Registered Investment Advisor of the Warner Companies, a Foundation Risk Partners Warburg Pincus company. The Warner Companies is a registered investment advisor with securities offered through M Holdings Security Incorporated, member of FINRA and SIPC. And now your host, friend and colleague, Mike Anderson.
My guest today is Kevin Palm, retirement plan consultant, actuary, and executive with over 30 years of experience consulting with plan sponsors to ensure they have successful retirement programs that provide desired benefit levels in a cost-effective way and by easing compliance with the myriad of complex government laws and regulations. Kevin, welcome. You were on a couple of years ago. Welcome back.
Yes, Mike. Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Absolutely. So today we're going to be talking about the rainbow of retirement plan options, from CalSavers to 401ks to defined benefit plans to non-qualified plans. And to get started, Kevin, what is the rainbow of retirement plan options?
Well, it's actually become quite a broad spectrum because the government, both the federal and state governments that have adopted the plans like CalSavers, really want employees to retire one day. So I thought I'd start with CalSavers since you and I are in California, but I think there's up to 14 states now that have adopted mandated state-sponsored retirement plans. And they're really Roth IRAs for the most part, with some states allowing, a safe harbor match employer contribution. So they're really basic, and of course, they're a mandate, right? So if you're an employer in that state, you're required to join that program if you don't have another plan and meet the exception to opt out of it, like you can in California. So that to me is the first color of the rainbow, is these state mandated programs. And right, Mike, it's new. It's in the last 5 years that states have decided to step into the game and very candidly offer a cost-effective approach for employers that don't have a 401k plan just yet.
Kevin, on that note with CalSavers, is that driven by state law? So it's now codified with the state of California and the 13, 14 other states?
Correct. There are definitely state-level laws that require an employer to adopt their plan if they don't meet one of the exceptions, which one of the exceptions is to have your own retirement plan, which that's what I'll say is the middle of the rainbow, if you will. So moving into the middle of the rainbow, many people are aware of the SEP IRA, the Simplified Employer Plan IRA, and that's an IRA account that somebody opens for themselves as the owner. But when you have one for yourself and you have employees, there's some rules about covering them as well, and you have to give them the same percent of pay. Then there's the simple IRA program that looks and smells a lot like a 401k plan, but again, it's IRA accounts, so that when someone terminates, you don't have to chase them down. It's their own account. And both the SEP IRA and the simple IRA have some less complexity around government requirements. And then you move into the realm that I live in, and that's the 401k plan from the Safe Harbor plan. There's actually a simple 401k plan. You can have 401ks, profit sharing plans with, you know, a fixed percent of pay allocation for employer contributions, can offer a match. And of course, Mike, you know, at Future Plan, we get into new comparability where we can have varying amounts for different people so long as we don't discriminate in favor of highly compensated employees. We can add a defined benefit cash balance plan onto that. So getting into the other colors of the rainbow, if you will. And so that's the realm that I live in and within Future Plan. And then the other final color of the rainbow is the non-qualified plan, which typically an employer won't enjoy an immediate tax deduction. And I'll just very candidly say this is outside my pay grade. I just know enough to be dangerous to refer them to the experts in that realm. And then sometimes you get into life insurance. So I want to acknowledge our colleagues that have life insurance programs, that the code of 1954 still made life insurance an interesting retirement vehicle as well, from the standpoint of sometimes you don't get an immediate tax deduction for your premium, But there's ways to have a tax advantage distribution stream from a life insurance program. And again, just going on record, Mike, I just know enough to be dangerous in that realm. That's not where I live. But in the spirit of what I know is to be the realm of and rainbow of retirement plans, that covers the whole spectrum.
And on that, through this rainbow, from the beginning of it all the way through the arc, in part, in terms of eligibility and use, is this driven by number of employees? Are there certain plan programs in that spectrum, in that rainbow, where they plans can only be used up to a certain number of employees, and then you've got to move on to the next tier?
That's a great question, Mike. Believe it or not, none are really limited by number of employees, just but typically the state mandated programs like CalSAVERS, the SEP IRA, the Simple IRA, the Simple 401k were meant to be for the small employer, right? Ideally low cost. The IRAs and the state mandated programs don't have 5,500 filings, so they're not as complicated. And then typically the larger you get, the more you want to be creative and you have more resource to you know, hire experts like yourself and me to put in a plan. You can get into the new comparability 401k plan, the cash balance defined benefit plan. And of course, some of the big granddaddy plans of the United States, you know, AT&T and the airlines, you know, they still have, traditional defined benefit plans. Many frozen, but believe it or not, some companies still have active defined benefit plans. So that's sort of the build, if you will, of participant counts. You know, the first part of the rainbow is built for smaller employers. You know, the simple IRA and the simple 401k were passed by Congress to offer something simple. I mean, believe it or not, simple is an acronym for something, but they picked it on purpose because it's supposed to be simple.
And with moving left to right through the rainbow of options, does that also lead to more complexity?
Indeed. And I've already referenced cost. You know, the state mandated programs really don't have a cost other than you hook up your payroll to start automatically enrolling your participants or your employees in that plan. You know, the SEP IRA and the Simple IRA don't have 5,500 requirements. The 5,500 is the informational tax return, if you will, for a retirement program. And then you can get into the Simple 401k where you do have to file a 5,500, but the testing that shows you don't discriminate in favor of highly compensated employees is non-existent because you get a free pass. And then you get into new comparability and then adding a defined benefit cash balance plan where you need an actuary. So the build, if you will, of complexity, rightfully so, goes along with the increased cost of having such programs.
And with that, is there also a stepped up grade of regulation and scope of regulation as the complexity increases, the compliance also goes hand in hand? There's more of it.
Oh, indeed. Like many of our listeners might have started off as sole proprietors, sole owners, and they had a SEP IRA, but that they realized they could add a 401k and allow deferrals, and get into a more, complicated, allocation formulas. But they also know when they went from a sole proprietor, you know, sole owner plan, all of a sudden they have Department of Labor requirements, like having to give out summary plan descriptions. And very candidly, Mike, I know you live in this realm of helping be a co-fiduciary for these plans. And, you know, having a good financial advisor is key because, you know, the employer needs to be picking prudent investments, if you will. So there, you can see there's a lot of complexity around that. I do want to throw in there, though, Mike, what happens with the complexity is typically your tax deductions get larger. So I want our audience to know that as much as your cost increases, and of course, your cost actually is an ordinary business expense. You can either have the plan assets pay for certain expenses or pay it as an ordinary business expense. So that's tax deductible. But all of a sudden, your deductions get much larger as you go from the simple IRA all the way up to having a 401k slash cash balance defined benefit program. And so many times the plan sponsor, CPA, and financial advisor would say, hey, this is a good thing for you. You're saving for retirement, you're deferring taxes, and totally the cost of the program pays for itself.
My guest today is Kevin Palm, and you're listening to The Anderson Files on podclips.io.
The Anderson Files is a proud advocate for the Small Business Council of America. For decades, the SBCA has been the voice for U.S. small business on the Hill and to the administration, successfully pursuing favorable tax, benefits, and estate legislation. To learn more and to become a member or sponsor, go to www.sbca.net.
Kevin, to continue on that thought, with higher tax deductions as the design and type of plan graduates up through the rainbow, the different companies will benefit from that. So in, you've got, let's say, a manufacturer with a few hundred employees. You've got, let's say, a law firm with 15 people, and, you know, different income levels, different needs, different, compensation. As the deductions become higher, the flexibility of the plans and how money can go into the plan, does that also broaden?
Oh, it does. I think, you know, the IRS and Department of Labor have guardrails on plan design. However, if you hire an expert like Future Plan, and, you know, we have a lot of very competent competitors in the space too, typically you do, you'll send a census in, whether you're, you know, yourself, you know, the business owner or owners in the spirit of a law firm or a medical group, and the employees. And typically, a consultant like myself would help figure out what's the most cost effective way to do it. Now, the manufacturing firm, in my experience, typically they want to give a uniform percent of pay to all their staff, right? Because they've already got salary ranges that giving a percent of pay makes sense from a retirement benefit standpoint. You move into the professional services organizations like law firms and medical groups. Typically, you're going to want to make it really attractive for the owner, doctors, and lawyers to have a nice, big, large tax deduction for the firm and save larger amounts so they can build up a nice retirement nest egg and, of course, manage the staff costs. But as Congress has done so well, high tide floats all boats. So typically, when you're having that type of program, the employees are getting a nice benefit, too. And hence why Congress has let these rules go now for, I think we're moving into 33 years of being able to have plan designs like new comparability and such things.
Do you think overall that the rules have become more accommodating for more dollars, more types of dollars, whether it's elected contributions or employer dollars to go into plans? Have the rules and the guardrails kind of broaden to allow more when companies can do more?
I think so. Well, broaden for sure. But also, like, an interesting fun fact about what the cost of living adjustments did. I always say it's, you know, sadly, it's increase in pricing that we got to deal with. But from 2022 to 2023, you know, the maximum contribution to a profit sharing plan went from $61,000 to $66,000. So for sure, the numbers have become quite compelling. And by the way, that $66,000 applies to a SEP IRA. So if a sole owner's listening to this plan, still consider a SEP IRA. It's simple. It's just an IRA account for yourself, and you can, you know, working with your tax advisor, can deduct up to 25% of what your pay is. So, I would still say that there's guardrails, but, you know, hiring a professional firm like Future Plan, can definitely help a plan sponsor navigate all that.
And with that, in moving from left to right, does that go hand in hand with increased administration costs? Do those increase?
Oh, indeed. And just because there's more work to do. You know, just like I said, a SEP IRA you can open up at your local bank or brokerage house, work with your tax advisor to fund 25% of pay, boom, you're done, no $5,500 to file. And now just go to the other side of the rainbow towards the defined benefit cash balance 401k arrangement. You know, you're typically a larger sponsor, you're gonna hire a vendor record keeper like a Empower, Hancock, American Funds, and, you know, hire a financial advisor like yourself. So definitely the cost does increase, but as I said earlier, so does your tax deduction and your flexibility to benefit who you want within the organization, whether it's the owners, whether it's a group of, salespeople. You know, there's a lot of flexibility when it comes to job classification and giving benefits to certain people.
And with that, are there
Are there ways or incentives, provisions where employers, plan sponsors can get deductions for plan costs? Is that feasible?
Oh, for sure. As I may have said earlier, ordinary business expense is typically where a plan sponsor will take the deduction for paying for the services of a future plan, paying for the advisor, paying for the vendor. Although lots of times those are costs are paid by the plan assets. So the participant spare the cost of the plan. So it's up, but it's up to the plan sponsor. I've seen some very candidly generous plan sponsors where they pay the expense out of their operating budget and let the plan assets grow without that friction of expense. So it's up to the plan sponsor how they want to build that program.
Yeah. Another thing that I'm seeing out in the industry and from company to company is individuals that, you know, they're working, they're now earning a quite a good wage. They've got, they may have maybe their last child moving through college or completed, their homes near paid for. And, you know, I see a real eagerness to be able to save more for retirement. Are you seeing that trend as well with that group of individuals, someone who's maybe, let's say, a dozen years to retirement? Are you seeing that as well? Or are you seeing other trends for that group of Americans?
Oh, for sure. And I think that's why the popularity of cash balance plans, which is a type of defined benefit plan, has been growing, because you could do way more than the $66,000. And by the way, for the listener, I'm not including the catch-up contribution that exists for 401k plans. But we actually have a tagline at Future Plan, you know, squeeze 20 years of retirement savings into 10 years. And very candidly, when you get close to 62 or closer to age 62, you can start looking at a significant three-digit contribution potentially to a cash balance defined benefit plan.
And also, how does a retirement plan program fit into an employer's overall suite of benefits? What are you seeing currently?
Oh, great question. In the sense that I always say that an employer has choices to attract and retain talent, and right, the economy coming out of the pandemic has been interesting, right? Where there's been quiet quitting and people leaving. And so there's a desire to attract talent. So obviously you start with the paycheck, right? What's your opening salary? But a good company, and I feel like I'm going to be preaching to the choir, but there's a good company has medical benefits. They typically have retirement benefits. You know, they might offer dental care and eye care. There might be other perks that they offer. But Mike, you and I have been in the business about the same amount of time, and for sure, paycheck and medical and retirement benefits are usually said all three at the same time, right? You want to have an attractive PPO HMO program for your employees, as well as you want to at least have a 401k plan. I would say most HR personnel, if not the owner of a business, the first question somebody might ask is, hey, thanks for the opening salary, but do you have a 401k plan where I might save some of this and defer my taxes, or, you know, use the Roth feature, which might be another conversation for another program. But quickly for the listener, the Roth is where it's, you don't get immediate tax deduction, but the government, barring you pass certain rules, you can take it out tax-free in retirement.
Yeah. One trend that I'm seeing is more companies utilizing the 401k, the retirement plan, really as to the extent that they possibly can, especially with matches, profit sharing, safe harbor dollars being applied into the plan to really make it a key part, or more of a key part of the employee's overall compensation program. And I'm seeing this also with nonprofit organizations that comparatively to the for-profit sector may not have as high as salaries or hourly wages, but I see them utilizing their retirement plans more to attract and retain. Are you seeing this as well?
Yeah, no, 100%. And the last many years, you know, easily 10 or 15 years looking at like the Profit Council of America's surveys, I think the average employer contribution to many plans is about 3% of an employee's pay. And typically when you add a new comparability or defined benefit cash balance plan to the program, all of a sudden that becomes 6% of pay for the employee. And you and I both know, start getting to 6% employer contribution, and let's say the employee is deferring 10% of their salary as a 401k deferral, that's 16% a year being saved for retirement. And even at a modest, say 5% projected asset accumulation rate, that can lead to pretty significant benefits for somebody, you know, in 15, 20, 30 years.
You're listening to the Anderson Files on podclips.io. Our guest today is Kevin Palm, retirement plan consultant, actuary, and executive. Kevin, to continue, how does the rainbow of options help an American retire? How does that overall picture look?
No, another great question, Mike, in the sense that I think, well, the three-legged stool, which is, I think, easily 50, 60-year-old reference, is the employer-sponsored retirement plan, Social Security, and the employee's own savings, right? And that savings could be the equity in their house. It could be their own personal after-tax savings. So this rainbow retirement plans that we're talking about fills the employer sponsored sector, that third leg. And most businesses in America know that they've got to have an attractive retirement program, again, to go along with their medical benefits and also what paycheck they offer. And so that's where this all fits into that classic three-legged stool. And including that, what the states now are doing, but also even with Secure 1.0 and Secure 2.0, you know, referencing two laws that Congress has passed the last couple of years, there's definitely an incentive to try to bolster this private retirement plan space. You know, not to get into Social Security, but many of us know Social Security has an interesting future around its funding. So it's powerful that employer-sponsored retirement plans are a big part of Americans' ability to save for their retirement.
And with that, and this may be a somewhat difficult question, but you know, we know what's happening here in the United States, this rainbow of options that has developed over time. Is it how things have developed here for retirement programs? For Americans, is it much different than what's happening elsewhere, you know, Canada and Europe, South America, Asia? Are we kind of unique in our path, or is pretty much from country to country where they're pretty much following the same path?
Ooh, that's a great question. And I'm going to tiptoe into it, Mike, in the sense that I know enough to be dangerous. What I'll share is I'm sensitive that, you know, England, Canada, Australia, some of the countries I'm aware of, they've moved away from a defined benefit type government program, like Social Security is a defined benefit plan. And they've mandated employee savings. So to me, what they've done is they've taken pieces of, say the state mandated program, and they've kind of forced employees to save through government sponsored retirement plans. I would say that America still is allowing private employers, including nonprofits, to have whatever retirement program they can muster and afford. But it's been interesting to see the state mandated programs coming more online, that if you don't want to have your own plan, the state's going to mandate you save money for your employees anyway. Which to me is moving in the direction some of the European countries and some of the other first world countries I'm aware have done. So, but kind of interesting enough, Mike, that might be another idea for another podcast to see how America's overall retirement strategy holds up to other countries.
That's another episode. Absolutely. Do you see the balance of the states? Grant, as you've referenced, you know, 14 states having some type of plan offering in place by an employer. Do you see the balance of the states following suit?
I would say so. I don't have exact statistics on my fingertips. Just poking around the internet yesterday, preparing for this podcast, was that 14 states have adopted some sort of mandated program. And again, most seem to just be an employee deferral that, the employer doesn't have anything to fund, but some states like Massachusetts does allow a sort of a safe harbor match. But I saw that up to 30 states are considering it. And kind of in the spirit of what you asked about how is America holding up with the rest of the world in retirement savings, there is no doubt that there's a need for some, I'll say, thinly margined businesses, whether you're a restaurant or where you maybe really struggle to have a broader employee benefit program. The states are acknowledging that. And so they're taking the automatic enrollment feature of 401k plans and saying, you employee are going to put 5% of your pay into this program because the states are mandating that I do it. And of course, Mike, it's an opportunity when somebody in any state with a mandated program is having to put their employees in that plan, they might have an opportunity to think about, oh, maybe I'll just go ahead and put in my own 401k plan, which would exempt you from the state mandated programs.
I would imagine, at least to date, the state mandated programs or their version of the offering is slightly different. So California is a little bit different than Oregon as opposed to the 12 other states. Is that what you're saying? I can imagine that they're certainly not exactly the same, but there is variation to them.
I would say so based upon my reading. Again, the whole state mandated programs outside of my realm of expertise, but it seems like I was just reading about Maryland's coming online, right? You and I both see a lot of industry publications talking about the state mandated programs because in a very interesting way, they're a competitor to the 401k plan. So yes, I think this, in each state sort of has its own different flavor on it. But again, might be interesting to get a state mandated, an expert about state mandated plans for one of your podcasts. Cause it is interesting. I'll throw another statistic that I might butcher a little bit, but I've heard that at least roughly half of Americans don't have access to an employer sponsored plan.
Everything that I've read over the last few years and currently is right in line with that percentage.
Yeah. So the states realize that, and I always like to say this too, because it's been published broadly. Americans are notoriously bad savers. So states are basically stepping in to fill that void and getting people to save 3-5% of pay. And I think that's where the variability actually I've seen in the state mandated programs is some states are putting everyone in at 5%. So, or some might be putting them in at a lower or higher percent. So there is a different flavor depending on what state you're in.
Kevin, as we wrap up, is there anything that you'd like to add?
I feel like in 25 minutes, we've covered a rather complicated subject pretty elegantly. I'm just appreciative to be able to partner with you to help share hopefully useful information for any plan sponsor, which is again, it can be a single employer plan, a multiple employer plan, a nonprofit, just so they know the their it's if you think about it, it's a plethora of options, right? From a very low cost state mandated program all the way up to, if you're a C corporation and need ability to defer tax in a non-qualified plan, there's just a broad spectrum. And so I encourage any listener who's curious to go seek out their, local expert, if you will, on retirement programs. And you can actually start with a financial advisor like yourself, or you can start with a future plan, third party administrator, actuarial consulting firm person like me. But there's a lot of great places for people to start their journey as they explore their retirement plan options.
Yeah. And Kevin, with that, what is the best way for listeners to contact you, to reach you?
Oh, by all means, they could just send an email to kevin.palm, palm just like the tree, at futureplan.com.
Perfect. Wonderful. Kevin, it's great to have you back after a couple of years. And yes, we covered a big subject really well. Over 25 minutes. So thanks so much. Hope to have you back in the future.
Yeah, thanks so much, Mike. Take care.
Thank you, Daryl Wayne, engineer, Mark Allen, producer. I'm Mike Anderson, and this is the Anderson Files on podclips.io. Keep calm and keep listening.
You've been listening to the Anderson Files with Mike Anderson. Visit us at podclips.io and check on the financial channel for more episodes and information on the Anderson Files.